me.
At the psychiatric inmates, right?
They call me, but...
You'll come rushing down with a court order, right?
There is no such thing.
I'm not trying to swamp you. I'm just wondering, you know, what, in fact, you would advise to people caught in the system, just as a general...
Well, what I always heard was just play their game and you know, try not to hassle them even though they're hassling you. Just kind of go along with it, be a good patient, and maybe they'll let you out.
Take deep breaths, huh?
Yeah.
Now, you know, last week we had I guess a friend of yours who also works for Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective, Kathy Dugan.
Mm-hmm.
She was talking about rather serious misconduct, as she saw it, from Officer David LeFevre, not to mention her public defender, Ken Acevedo, and the prosecutor and the entire court system around allegations that she, who lives in a trailer park, was using heroin, and this was the basis which LeFevre grabbed her and took her off to jail, but then, you know, apparently they held up on the tests for 2 months, or they didn't get the test results back for 2 months, and the test results haven't shown any for such thing, but they hadn't come back when she spoke about the issue last show. I don't know Kathy Dugan. I do know there have been some concerns about Officer LeFevre. I know he arrested me once, cited me, I should say, which is actually technically an arrest, a non-custodial arrest, for leaning against a trash can as I was observing his, in tape recording, his interaction with a youth. He was actually harassing a youth up at Cathcart and Pacific, previously Hippie Corner, before they decornered it and de-hippied it. What's your opinion of, how long have you known Kathy Dugan yourself?
Around 10 years, I think.
Is she a heroin user? In what capacity have you known her? Have you known her as a co-worker against psychiatric abuse, or just a friend, or how have you known her?
Well, she's probably a co-worker in PERT, and she's just one of my very best friends.
I
have all kinds of admiration for her. I mean, they've taken her, you know, I don't know if you know, but she was in Metro magazine a few years ago. Kathy was interviewed about the electroshock business. And from her 13th summer, she would, you know, they electroshocked her. And society started right off really doing crummy things to her. But the same idea that, say, a neighbor could call in and say, there's drugs being used there, person can also, like, call in and say, my neighbor is acting strangely. I think they should be incarcerated. It's like there's no defense for anybody claiming that you're doing something or turning you into the authorities, whether it's the mental health system or the police. Somehow the people that are the ones telling on people, whether right or wrong.
The snitches are sacred.
It's absolutely wrong. In most cases, wrong. It's just the person gets in all kinds of trouble for just someone else, you know, a neighbor or anybody calling in to give their unknowledgeable opinion to the authorities, and then all hell breaks loose.
Well, I know that she told us that this Officer LeFevre invaded her trailer, that he held her in handcuffs for hours at the at the police station, that he didn't show up for 4 different court appearances, and that she really is being dragged through the mill on I guess to what for many people is kind of a chilling charge, which is what, possession of heroin, because he allegedly found some teeny tiny quantity of what he claims to be heroin, but what we haven't got the test back yet, or I'm a little bit unclear on all the details, but based upon what she said last week, it sounded like, well, first of all, I have problems with any prosecutions around this kind of the drug war anyway. I believe it is probably the most single vicious factor in impacting our society today. I mean, even you know, the military doesn't have such a direct effect on us as the drug war, because of course the whole system is now honeycombed with this bogus security mania. You know, the prisons are filled with people who have committed so-called victimless crimes, or not so-called, they are victimless, so-called crimes, and you have a nation of informants growing up, and of course a constitution that is sort of, you know, fading away, if it hasn't already gone. And I guess you also seem to have the exaltation of the police force as the sort of the new high priest. And the people who can do no wrong. They can shoot people down in San Jose, one after another, and you finally get some comment, oh, well, we'd like to find a better approach to this. You know, that's been in the headlines recently. So your general experience, getting back to Kathy Dugan and getting off my rant, is that Kathy, you believe, is a credible individual. You heard the show last time?
Yes, I did.
And I guess she's spoken to you about this. In fact, I think you helped her get out of jail, right? I mean, you were one of her contacts, and you've been a supportive person to her.
Yes.
What do you think of all this? Is this you know anything about this officer Lefebvre and
just from what I've heard from your show?
Uh-huh.
And I wouldn't know him if I saw him.
Yeah. No. I mean, you know, I do criticize and air criticism of officers who engage in behavior that sounds to me to be either unconstitutional or abusive or unfair or brutal, and I think it's important that we do that. But I, you know, this is not anything personal. I don't have any personal problems with Officer Lefebvre. I mean, he did arrest me. He did run me through the court system. But you know, I mean, I don't spit when I see him on the street. You know, and I don't go into a foaming lather. But I'm
hold your cool really well. I admire that.
I don't hate Officer Lefebvre. I don't feel any great hostility.
Yeah,
towards
yeah.
Him. But I mean, I am concerned that he is engaging in abusive behavior towards a variety of people, and that he's protected in doing so by Chief Belcher and the other subordinates of Belcher's, who, you know, who kind of rigidly draw this kind of closed, covered wagon. You know, they circle the wagons, and they don't accept criticism, and they don't really consider what's going on. And Kathy Dugan, you know, gets left out to dry, she's jailed, and then she's dragged into court, and I guess Lefebvre has been back to her house a couple times. Is that right?
I just heard on your show about him coming back a week later at 11:30 at night. I hadn't on that before.
I mean, what is going on here, and what is the menace? What is the, you know, the public safety concern that is motivating this kind of behavior? I just don't understand it. Do you have any insight for us on this?
No.
It sounds to me like, you know, people with disturbed power needs, and you know, I'm not innocent of this myself. I like to throw my weight around in different situations, and if I were given a badge and a gun, I might throw it around even more. I mean, it's a sort of an evil temptation when you get that kind of power. As we know, you know, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely, or I should say power tends to corrupt. And the danger is that that's going to happen unless there's real citizen oversight. And getting back, I guess, to what we were talking about earlier, the Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective, do you have people actually helping you with this group, or are you the lone
ranger?
It's
a group, you know, of people who mainly have been through the mill of the mental health system.
Is there a number people can contact this group at if they want to?
They could call. My number is a contact number, and so is Kathy's, but let's leave her alone for a while. mine is
475-7904.
475-7904. Yeah, and then if anybody has, like, court referral hours or anything, they can work for PERC also. And
so
we need more people to, say, visit the law facilities and to attend the conservatorship hearings that go Friday at 1:30 every Friday.
Uh-huh. Well, now, so if you have a community service ticket you have to work off, they can give you a call at...
Yes.
The phone number again is...
757904.
475-7904. You can give a call to Jane Kaiser, who is working with the Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective.
Bravo.
Hey, hey. You know, I guess I'm not entirely uneducable here. And give her some help. Get, you know, the kind of resource system you set up may eventually save you or, you know,
right,
help you.
Okay, and that was an interview conducted earlier today by Robert Morris with the psychiatric inmates rights worker, Jane Kaiser. And now we're going to switch to, you're listening to 96.3 FM on your radio dial. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I am your substitute or guest host, Becky Johnson, and this is Bathrobes Pierce Broadsides. Civil Rights for the Poor. If you'd like to join the show and have your comments on the air, call us at 427-3772. And we'd love to hear from you. Okay, I'm going to play another interview that was done by Robert Morris with Theodore Carey. And this is regarding a case that was, I think, heard on Friday in Department 5, Judge Attucks Court, in which two defendants were facing charges with felony cultivation based on having gone to a store and purchased some items for that are used for hydroponic growing, and based on officers staking out that store and following people home and getting their license plate numbers, and they subpoenaing their PG&E bills, which in this particular case didn't indicate anything at all, they're able to get search warrants and go into people's homes and search them. So we had a sort of a celebrated attorney locally, or not local, an attorney, Tony Serra, who I think he's local to San Francisco, although he's also defended people like Bear Lincoln up in Eureka, California, and some other notables. So let's hear that interview now.
My mind's a blank.
Okay, well, again, if you want to find out more information about the, I know there's an upcoming
Okay, and that's the end of the Jane Kaiser interview.
Yeah, that's a scary one.
Making the rounds, are going to come around with, you know, the big goon, the goon squad's going to come to your door and demand you take your medication or else. That's
in the works. That's really scary.
So, any updates on that?
No. States have passed it.
And I guess it's under consideration in California. If you want to help fight this, or you want to talk about it with someone who's knowledgeable or get some interesting informational sources, you can contact Jane Kaiser, who we've been talking to. And Jane, I want to thank you.
Yeah.
At 475-7904.
Thank you.
Thank you. We now have a phone call to Theodore Carey. Okay, on the line with us, we have community activist Theodora Carey. Hi, Theodora.
Hi, Robert.
How are you?
Okay.
I know I last saw you in court on Friday in the courtroom of the our local judge, Robert Attuck.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, taking up a whole day with a rather lengthy court case in what was a sort of an unusual... an interesting process called a Franks motion.
Right.
You want to tell us a little bit about that and why people should be concerned about that?
Well, the case in question that people should be very concerned about, it's one of 25 busts that came out of police spy operation on a local hydroponics store that was ultimately forced to close because the police action was so heavy that they lost business and had to leave the community. Lost about $50,000 thanks to this police action. But before they closed, the police were able to spy on and follow over 25 people to their homes and then obtain search warrants.
Now, a hydroponic store, that sells anti-personnel weapons, terrorist bombs, things like that?
Terrorist equipment like grow lights and fertilizer and things that people use to grow indoors, whether it's marijuana, orchids, tomatoes, whatever. A lot of people like to do indoor growing, especially in foggy areas. It's a good way to, you know, get crops all year round. So, you know, it is a legitimate business. And as Tony Serra, the lawyer for the accused, in this case pointed out, there are, you know, currently, thanks to the success of 215, the medical marijuana initiative, there are, I think he estimated, well over, I think he even said 100,000, I'm not sure, but, might have been in the tens of thousands of people who under 215 are authorized to grow their own marijuana. And in this kind of activity that the cops were doing, there was no attempt to figure out whether the folks that were being followed home were legitimate growers or not. It was just...
whether they were growing marijuana at all.
Right. It was all very... It was very interesting to watch this Franks hearing, because what the Franks hearing was about was to challenge the search warrant that the narcotics cops used to justify searching this home and finding indeed that there was a marijuana growing operation going on. But the reason the search warrant was being challenged, because the grounds upon which the search warrant were grounded were very, to my mind, very iffy, and to the lawyers' minds, very iffy, and obviously to the judge, in order to grant this hearing, he had to have some doubts in his mind, too. Unfortunately, the hearing, he didn't rule in the favor of the defendants that the search warrant should be that the whole search warrant should be tossed out. But he was interested in the issues raised.
Well, the hearing, as I understood it, had kind of at least two aspects. I was only there for the first part, where the judge kind of quickly upheld the search warrant per se. But then, the second part of the hearing, you went into some, you were there for the afternoon session, it wasn't an examination of the credibility of the police officer involved, whether he in fact... Go ahead.
Well, the police officer is Sergeant Jim Hart, who's head of the county's anti-marijuana forces, and he's involved in the camp program that brings in the helicopters every year, and so he's basically heads up the anti-marijuana team, and the guy's notorious in town for, I've talked to several people who've been busted by him, and when the police report's filled out, they find that a certain amount of the marijuana which they had in their possession is not accounted for in the police report, which means it's being pocketed by Mr. Hart and sold elsewhere.
Sort of a Hart tax, so to speak?
A Hart tax, I guess so. But as we see so often with these narcotics enforcers, they're very corrupt, and they indulge in the same behaviors that they are busting other people for. Jim Hart had claimed that it was actually a very minor point. He had claimed that he saw the suspect coming out of the hydroponic store with a gallon of fertilizer, and the gentleman said, "No, I only had a light." And Mr. Hart said something very revealing, basically that, you know, if you came out of that store with anything, you were suspected of being a marijuana grower. So in his mind, there was no legitimate use of hydroponics supplies.
Did Judge Attic seem to kind of agree with this notion that if you buy anything from a hydroponic store, you immediately incur the right of the police to run after you and search your house?
He didn't seem to question it too heartily. One of the other issues that was raised that he also refused to give any credence to, unfortunately, that in the bust was not just simply on what the cops would do, is they would follow the people home from the store, find out their address, and then get their PG&E records. And if it looked like there was higher PG&E, higher use than normal, a very vague concept because they don't back it up with any justification. In order to get the search warrant, you would think they'd have to prove that it was higher than normal to the judge. They don't. They just have to say, we're the experts, we know what higher than normal is, and this person has higher than normal. When they looked at the details of this particular search warrant and looked at how the cops came to the conclusion that it was higher than normal, they found that what the cops did was compare 3 months of the house being uninhabited and comparing that usage with 1 month of the house being habited. Well, of course, the electricity rate is going to go up because people are using lights, using electricity, using refrigerators, etc. And this was considered legitimate police work to make those kind of comparisons between an empty house, nobody living there, and a house that somebody's living in. So it's very corrupt at its core. Judge Attic is certainly not a judge who's going to challenge that.
Do we have any judges, Theodora, you think would be likely to assert the rights of, well, it seems to me elementary, basic constitutional rights to be freed from excessive search and seizures or abusive search and seizures?
Well, I wouldn't know from firsthand, but one of the lawyers mentioned that Kelly, Judge Kelly, had the guts to suspend search warrants when they were challenged. That he often would rule against the cops, and I've been told that Commissioner Salazar, who's I guess a traffic commissioner and may be running for judgeship in next year, might be a friendly force in that direction too. But you know, people need to ask questions and find out who these people are, and either elect them or defeat them. But currently I would say most of the judges are firmly in the hands of the law enforcement establishment when it comes to these kind of tactics.
Most of them come from, almost all of them come from the DA's office. There's no question about that. And it's interesting, unfortunately, Judge Attic, who I call Artichoke Heart Attic because of his treatment of Sandra Loringer a decade ago, the woman who served food to homeless people, and he sentenced her to 3 weeks in jail. And he also has recently been very harsh in other cases, like the case of Miguel Gutierrez, who a Beach Flats person who's accused of some gang-related assault, and very flimsy evidence. The entire community came out to support him, and Attic not only gave him a 4-year, or was it a 7-year prison sentence somewhere in there, but the way he treated the courtroom was in, you know, kind of a rigid, kind of repressive quality. And I noticed that same kind of attitude on Friday when I, as I understand it, Alan Brady, who was wearing a, I guess you would call it sort of a religious, a cap. He was ordered out of the courtroom by the bailiff, and eventually he was let back in, but instead of, you know, there being a reasonable kind of give and take, I heard you trying to talk to the bailiff, and the bailiff wouldn't really listen to you.
No, it's arbitrary authority, and that's, you know, I'm the boss, therefore I get to do or say what I want. And he did back off. You know, the bailiff did back off when one of the public defenders came up and, you know, explained to him that Jews do have rights in this courtroom to wear hats. And so he did back off when somebody with some knowledge of the law one-upped him with knowledge.
You also had
knowledge. He wasn't going to back off for the sake of...
Even though you had knowledge of the law, just because you didn't have the credentials.
I didn't have the credentials. I was considered just a peon.
Right, so it has to be the priest caste that comes up and tells the bailiff what the story is, not the ordinary citizen who pays the bailiff's salary.
Right.
You know, I thought that this county and this state passed laws that allowed people to use medical marijuana. Am I wrong in that?
Well, we did, and you know that still the details are still being worked out. I think in some cases the cops have been quite cooperative. I think in others that they've still proceeded with the bust, even if the person in question had all their documentation and were able to show them letters from the doctor and authorization. that they've still proceeded with the bust, and in some cases press charges and others not. But definitely law enforcement does not like power taken away from them, and they're very slow. You know, what's interesting is when we've been going to the Board of Supervisors and into the courtrooms challenging the marijuana cases for years now, and, you know, the cops' line is, you know, we don't like these laws either, but you got to change them, otherwise we got to do it. Okay, we get enough energy, enough money, enough people organized to change the laws, and they still act as if we didn't do it. You know, so they're not cooperative. I mean, some are, but often the ones who are in charge of busting for marijuana and other substances are the ones who, you know, who will not honor the changes in the law, because they're already operating with a fascist mentality, which says, I've got the gun, I get to do what I want to do, regardless of what the law says.
I'm kind of straying a little bit here, Theodora, but I think I'm talking to a woman who knows a lot about this issue and has been working on it for years, if not decades. What's the reason, in your mind, in Santa Cruz County, that there is such resistance to letting people use marijuana medically? Or is there that resistance? What is your sense of this?
Well, I think, you know, relative to some of the other more conservative counties, that we probably have less resistance in our law enforcement and more open cooperation. So, you know, and relative to the amount of marijuana activity that does go on in this community, we have a lighter enforcement. It doesn't feel like that if you're the one busted, and it certainly didn't feel like that to the, you know, the 25 people now dealing with, you know, the cop searches after going to a store and buying a light or something like that. It, you know, it certainly feels pretty heavy-handed, but, you know, when you look at the overall use and trafficking of marijuana in this community, you know, the cops really aren't closing down that activity in the way that they could if they were dead set against it. You know, so my guess is, yeah, we've got a couple of, marijuana cowboys out there who have carte blanche to do what they do, but fortunately there's not enough of them to do all that much. And, you know, I give thanks for that, because marijuana is a healthy choice. It's a healthy herb. It's, you know, even if you're thinking, you know, you're just going to toke a little to relax, that has health benefits too. So it's a healthy choice when it comes to using substances. Much healthier than beer, alcohol, much healthier than tobacco, and any of the illegal white powders, much healthier than the pharmaceutical substances. So I'm happy to see people growing their own and sharing it with friends. I have no problem with that.
And yet, in this county, we have not taken the step that, say, Oakland and I guess maybe Mendocino and Humboldt counties, as I understand, have or are planning to take, to actually authorize, you know, ID cards. If that's a good idea, I'm not sure. But
I think you know, the people who are, you know, people like Valerie Corral, who's works with the Women's Alliance for Medical Marijuana and is probably the lead voice in this community for medical marijuana support and reform, isn't real clear that that IDs are the way to go either. So she is one of the lead voices, is pushing it in that direction.
I guess the concern, I would prefer not to see IDs either, but I know the Santa Cruz Cannabis Club is closed down, and that there's a long waiting list for WAM. And the rest of the community is really put into a legally...
Well, and that's because, you know, I mean, there probably is room for another cannabis club to open on some level. But in order to do that, you have to have money, you have to have...
A landlord is willing to...
You have to be willing to deal with the cops and the powers that be to...
You have to want to suffer the kinds of attacks that, I guess, Peter Baez was suffering over in San Jose.
Right. It's a tricky proposition, and so a lot of people are fearing to step in there. And, you know, the truth is, there's you know, marijuana is available, and people who, you know, people who are part of the culture are able to get it. Unfortunately, the people who can't get it very easily are the...
people
who are seriously ill and are not, you know, part of the marijuana culture by lifestyle choice, and therefore probably don't have a connection to getting it. But
well, getting back to the case on Friday, what happened during the afternoon? I know the search warrant was quickly upheld in the morning.
Well, it wasn't fully upheld in the morning. They were coming back to do more of the hearing and see if the judge was, you know, what direction he was leaning.
What were the issues in the afternoon?
Well, it was the same issues we've talked about. He did not rule on them in the morning. That's why they came back in the afternoon.
The issue is as to whether...
To continue the hearing. And basically, a lot of the afternoon session was behind closed doors, so we didn't get to see the negotiations. But what happened, basically, is that the judge let it be known that he was not gonna quash the search warrant, which means he was gonna allow the search warrant to stand, which means the evidence would be allowed to be admitted into evidence in the courtroom. And the lawyers for the defense felt that they did not have a strong enough case, so that they might as well go ahead and negotiate and do the plea bargain. So that's what they did. So both gentlemen pled no contest to the charges, and were given fairly light sentences. At least, you know, we give thanks for that. One will not have to go to jail, though he will have to perform work release for the county, and the other gentleman will have to go spend some time at the farm, but we'll be able to get work furlough, which will mean they'll be able to hold down their job. So,
what were they accused of again? What were they charged?
They were accused of cultivation with intent for sales, but there was no indication that sales really would have been on the agenda. One man did, after the fact, have a medical certificate from a doctor, but it was after the fact, so they wouldn't accept it. But they stated all along their intention was for personal use. But they were accused of growing for sales.
We're talking about a large quantity?
We're talking probably about 50 plants, and then they had some clones. And the clones hadn't rooted yet, so technically they weren't plants. Now, the prosecution did count them as plants, but I guess legally that could have been challenged, because in federal court it's already been ruled that anything without a root system cannot be considered a plant, and that's...
It kind of makes me sick to my stomach to see this endless machine grinding on, feeding the salaries of defense attorneys and prosecuting attorneys and bailiffs and...
You know what I do when I'm sick to my stomach?
I can guess. One last question. We're talking to Theodora Carey. Theodora, how would you describe yourself? How should I describe you for the audience?
Well, I call myself an over-activist. I've worked on the marijuana, hemp, industrial hemp, medical marijuana, drug war issue since 1990. Mm-hmm. And... this last year, I worked on the trying to stop and successfully stopping the fluoridation of our city waters here.
That has been stopped?
Well, we've got a prohibition in place now. The next step is up to the state to come in and sue us. Mm-hmm. But there's several cities and towns ahead of us, because we're not the only ones saying no to the poisoning of our drinking water.
But it's sort of a rare phenomenon, relatively speaking, right?
To fight back.
Right. Most communities have accepted it without a struggle.
Well, where we are with fluoridation is where we were in 1992 when the county of Santa Cruz, we passed a medical marijuana initiative. Here we were one of the second community in the United States to pass such an initiative and help keep the ball rolling, which eventually became Proposition 215, and that's where we're at with fluoridation. We helped lift up opposition to fluoridation to certainly a state level and in some ways a national level, that we were fighting back. And out of that, other communities are saying, wait, we don't have to swallow this either. Certainly some communities are ready to, you know, just take their daily dose of poison, no question asked. But, it's a growing movement. People are reclaiming their you know, their powers to challenge this. And
it was a kind of a close election, I know, because it was a special election. There was a question which I know at least one woman raised, which was, if it was so close, why didn't all the the pro-fluoride forces, who were certainly outspent the anti-fluoride forces by, I say, the anti-choice forces, they were the folks who wanted to insist everybody be fluoridated whether they wanted it or not, why didn't these folks who were so hot to have everybody fluoridated demand or pay for a recount?
You know, it's a good question. I have it too, and if you get to interview someone like Cynthia Matthews or anyone involved in that movement, ask them.
It was a very close vote, right?
They certainly had the money to challenge it, but they didn't. So, I'll just leave it at speculation, but we wonder about that. We're suspicious that there might have been some skullduggery going on, but certainly that's hard to prove. And when you get into the issue of vote scam and false, you know, now that we're in the computer age, there's really no real way to know that we're getting the true election results, because those kind of it all depends on how the computer's programmed, who has access to the back door to reprogram it, those kind of details. Now, you know, you got young hackers able to break in and change the websites of the U.S. military. I also got electoral computers that are even probably more vulnerable to that activity. So, yeah, that is a question in our minds.
You know, forfeiture has been an issue that a lot of us have been concerned about. The power of the police to seize resources even before a conviction.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.
Go ahead. We're talking about forfeiture? Go ahead.
We're talking about forfeiture, and the state laws, as I said, changed in 94 and were tightened up to require a conviction before a property could be forfeited.
So the controversy that I've heard at the federal level has to do with those other...
The federal level has had looser forfeiture laws, and now they're starting... Not now. It's been an ongoing process. It's amazing. Some of the people that were, you know, certainly at odds with a lot of the time in Congress are actually on our side on this one.
Henry Hyde, for instance.
Yeah, people that are, you know, right-wing conservatives that would certainly take away other of our rights without blinking an eyelash are actually quite concerned about this issue and quite articulate about it, and were able to bring in a victory. So things are, I guess it goes to the Senate now. But, you know, definitely law enforcement is all up in arms.
Ironically,
take away our right to rip off people indiscriminately.
Yeah, that's, and Clinton seems to be leading the pack. Our president. Before a conviction by a preponderance of the evidence. Actually, you have to prove it's the other way around.
That's what the new laws, hopefully they will get passed in the Senate and signed by the president, but it's not a given that the new laws would require conviction, would require that the amount forfeited is in relationship to what the crime was, rather than, you know, finding somebody with one plant and taking away their, you know, 150-acre estate.
The irony is that the Democrat Clinton is in favor of this drug war. Is it just that he's...
Well, anybody who thinks Clinton is truly a Democrat, you know,
hasn't been reading the paper.
Hasn't been reading the paper, hasn't been doing their homework, and is, you know, pretty ignorant politically. There's many reasons to not like Clinton. But he is not a man of the people. He is not here for our own good.
Yugoslavia as a member.
What he did to Yugoslavia, he would have no problems doing. Well, he did it in Waco, in Waco was under his watch, Waco, Texas, where they literally incinerated over 80 people, most of them children. Ruby Ridge was under his watch, where a man who was accused of selling a sawed-off shotgun was punished by having his wife and his baby, and not his baby, his wife and his 15-year-old son shot down in cold blood right on their own property by an FBI sniper who was just doing his job. So, you know, these kind of tactics are, this is who Clinton represents, this is who Janet Reno represents. These people, as far as I'm concerned, might as well be aliens in terms of their...
Clinton's boys are apparently after girls as well, we would say. They're also after one of our old friends, B.E. Smith, in one of the first federal cases for medical marijuana growing. Do you have any updates on that?
Well, B.E.'s sitting in jail. He's going to have a bail hearing tomorrow. Hopefully he'll be out on bail. He was growing a medical marijuana grow of about 80 plants, working with a physician up in that area in Trinity County. And he was very open and somewhat public about declaring this grow. And because he's an activist on common law issues as well, his local law enforcement in Trinity County decided they didn't want to bust him because they knew they'd lose, so they invited in the federal forces to bust him. Now, the feds don't usually bust, take on marijuana cultivation cases for anything other than the larger grows, you know, up to, you know, over 1,000. So for them to take on a small grow like this was really more about rubbing salt into the wounds of the medical marijuana movement and proving that the feds have the ability to ignore state law and come in and you know, bust people under federal law, even though what they're doing is legal under state law.
How old is B.E.?
B.E.'s in his mid-50s. So anyway, I want to finish, you know, in terms, so he was busted by the feds, and he just had his trial. The federal courts refused, the judge refused to let him enter any information into evidence about 215 or about medical marijuana or about his medical use and, you know, working with a physician. So it's pretty much a railroad. He's sitting in jail now, hoping to get bail. They are going to appeal, and I guess they probably had planned on that all along. They knew they wouldn't get much of a hearing at the first time out, so they're getting ready for the appeal. But meanwhile, he's sitting in jail, and if people, anybody listening to this would like to send a letter very quickly, because we only have till Friday to get the letters there, to his probation officer to basically affect the sentencing so that it's lighter rather than heavier, please give me a call. My number is 458-1734.
458-1734. We're talking to Theodore Carey.
Right, and we can use all the support on that. Just simple letter writing at this point. But just people need to know that the medical marijuana laws, even though they've been passed now by California, Oregon, Washington, Alaska,
Arizona,
and soon to be passed by Colorado and Washington, D.C., even though the people of the United States are telling the feds to back off in medical cases, they are not. They're bound and determined to keep this wonder plant out of our reaches and so they can continue to sell us the poisonous pharmaceutical products that ultimately are death promoting.
B.E. Smith has been in jail now for what, 2 months?
I don't think it's been 2 months, has it been?
It's been at least a month and a half, I think.
Okay, so it's getting close. So he's going to have a bail hearing tomorrow.
Did he have a jury trial, or did he just have a trial before that?
I think he did have a jury trial, but because he couldn't introduce any evidence, and because most jurors don't really understand that they can rule on a law's legitimacy as well as whether somebody's guilty or innocent of breaking that law. Most jurors don't know that anymore, so they think that even though the law is bad, if somebody's guilty of breaking it, then they're guilty. And that's, you know, people listening, any of you listening to this, if you find yourself on a jury trying to judge guilt or innocence for a law that you know is unconstitutional, you can rule that that person is innocent. You have the right to refuse to convict people of breaking bad law.
If you'd like to write a letter to B.E. Smith's parole officer in order to help him get his freedom, at least temporarily pending this appeal, do give a call to Theodora at 458-1734. And again, time is limited. The letter presumably has to be sent Monday or Tuesday to arrive there on Friday.
Or it can be faxed. You can fax it just there right away. But there is time for those who are concerned. When they know that we're watching, these letters basically say, we know what you're doing, we're watching, we encourage you to be light on this person because he's a good, upstanding citizen, and we pass these laws for a reason, and everybody has their own little take on what to write. But the truth is, the more eyes that are watching, then the less blatant they're going to be.
Now, B.E. Smith is also, of course, famous down here for pioneering the defense of taking to a magistrate, which you have done some seminars on yourself, right?
Well, just with him, we raised the issue, the idea that when you are stopped, that you have the right to be taken to a magistrate right away, or within 2 hours, rather than signing your ticket. And it's a complex argument, so I don't want to send anybody away from this interview thinking that it's a simple matter of asking for a magistrate, because it's not. You'll wind up in jail. But it is trying to get law enforcement to practice what it preaches, which is that we're supposed to follow the law. In many instances, the local law enforcement practices ignore the law, and how do you make them accountable?
Is anything coming up around that, Theodore, in terms of following up seminars on that issue?
No, that's his expertise, and
he's in jail.
In jail.
Well, listen, we've been talking to Theodore Carey, who is an over-activist, as she describes herself, with fighting the good fight against this benighted drug war that has been going on, which essentially is, again, the new prohibition of the aughts, that's been the war of the 90s, now we're going into the 2000s. Well, I wish we could, declare this war over. It would be nice. If you want to...
When people understand, the war is not about getting rid of the drugs, it's really about controlling who makes the money on them, then you'll know that you'll understand why this war will never be over, unless, like with the Vietnam War, we get millions of people on the streets demanding it. They're going to milk it for all it's worth, because the same people that are waging this war on drugs are the same people at the top who are profiting from the drug running in this country.
Interestingly enough, it's all been documented.
And interesting enough, too, more and more people understand that, too. So that, the years of organizing and getting information out have paid off. I think, the general understanding, at least in this community, is that it is very corrupt. But that doesn't change anything unless people get organized, ask hard questions of their candidates. And unfortunately, in California, neither the Democratic or Republican leadership really takes on this issue. They're working at it because of 215. There is some activity in the legislature around how to bring 215 into practice. But the Democrats would never pick up this issue on their own. They never would have. The Republicans, actually, the Republicans have picked up some of the forfeiture issues and been organized against the kind of forfeiture. So politics makes strange bedfellows. So
it's interesting that the party out of power, I think, that sometimes uses these issues. I know that when the Democrats were out of power, they were supporting rights of the homeless in San Francisco, but when Ray Brown won, suddenly you heard nothing as they began these sweeps of the parks and so forth. And I think it's a similar thing with the drug war, that, the Democrats out of power may be more critical of this issue than Democrats in power.
But also, which Democrats are getting elected, because often the ones who get elected are the ones who are playing the money games and the power games.
There you go.
So, there are Democrats, and then there are Democrats who are in name only in order to get the funding and the positioning.
Anything coming up locally that people can do to help out, and is there another...
Well, it's a little bit early, but, we've got elections next year, and we're going to be electing another sheriff, another, you know, there'll be time to elect sheriffs, judges, and whatnot. People need to pay attention to that. Who do you, you know, what do you, if you think things are wrong with the system as it's being practiced, though, we need to find candidates and judges who really will move us in the right direction.
Sounds sensible to me. Thanks, Theodora.
Sure, thank you for you know, being responsible media here and getting good information out.
And that was an interview conducted by Robert Norris with Theodora Carey earlier today. And this is Sunday, July 11th. I'm Becky Johnson. I'm your guest host on Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides. And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM on your radio dial. Following up a little on what the interview you heard and that case that was heard on Friday with attorney Tony Serra. Part of the seizure of the PG&E bills, the district attorney or the marijuana enforcement team, after seizing the PG&E bills in the district attorney's office, determined that there had been a sevenfold increase in power for one of the defendants. That was based on comparing 3 months in which the building was uninhabited and 1 month in which it was inhabited. Another suspect who the marijuana enforcement net team had followed home and had seized their PG&E bills actually did have a high use of PG&E, so they issued a search warrant and they found they issued the search warrant and they found that there was a power sucking refrigerator in there. And we have a telephone call. And no, we don't. Well, that was a telephone call. We'll call back, caller. I'll try to get you. Judge Attic was the judge for the Brian Andrus case as well as for the Miguel Gutierrez case.
Free Radio?
Hello?
Hello.
Hi there.
You are on the air.
That was me. But I heard you talking, so I didn't want to interrupt you. But
oh.
But, yeah, I heard you talking about the drug war and some of the stuff that's going on there. I had a chance to witness some of the drug war myself.
Recently?
The more subtle drug war, yes. Last Wednesday, as a matter of fact. The Santa Cruz Police's neighborhood enforcement team was out and about down on the levees, of course.
Uh-huh.
And right around the Broadway Bridge, between the Broadway Bridge and Mike Fox Park, and even a little bit further.
You know, isn't it strange how nobody buys and sells drugs in houses?
I think that's where it's all going now.
That they just go down to the levee and buy and sell drugs?
Well, see, the thing is that there's not that much happening anymore. At least that's the way I feel. Since they have this new law where you can't be on the levee after dark,
mm-hmm.
and most of the drug trade was going on after dark, so of course it's, you know, you have the darkness, and people were doing it. But now it's become much less, I think, personally, on the streets downtown. Like Cathcart and Pacific's gone now, and there's hardly any drugs being sold anywhere, yet they still go out and do these drug stings. Down in the beach flats, what they'll do is they'll send in an undercover officer into where they're supposedly dealing drugs and try to hook up with somebody and record that whole conversation. And I believe they arrested maybe one person, and then maybe one or another, but after a while people knew what was going on and alerted each other, and the cops, you know, they had to pull out. So instead they decided to bust everybody for being on the levee after dark. And they're of course searching between rocks for drugs and this and that.
So they don't actually have to find any drugs.
No.
You're there, so therefore you're guilty.
Well, I counted at least 11 officers were involved in it, the ones I saw and heard. There are 11 officers, and they're all getting paid, what, $20, $30 an hour to do this, and what they worked about 3 hours, maybe 4 hours.
And I think
hours.
The sergeants are getting $45 an hour.
Right. And so they're all doing this to bust these small little nickel and dime dealers, which are hardly happening at all anymore since the gentrification of our wonderful city. And I noticed that they also decided to go down to the mall after that and do their little undercover operation on the mall. And there, I think I noticed one of the officers, he's a mall cop, and he's rather large, and I think it was him, I'm not certain. But I was just happened to be sitting downtown, and I saw this guy that looked a lot like one of the mall cops walking around and asking people this and asking people that. I couldn't hear what he was saying, but I can only imagine. And a lot of people weren't taking him for sure. And then, sure enough, what do I see is the Santa Cruz police undercover cars riding around. And I guess they didn't get any action, so then they left. So I'm kind of wondering if these cops are going to have to, are going to be losing their jobs since the drug war's been, you know, pretty much. I mean, downtown, there's hardly any more drug transactions happening. There's a few. There's not that much. The marijuana trade is pretty much gone. There's heroin, and there's probably speed happening.
But, you know, if you go in the courts, people are getting busted for marijuana every every day that the courts are. Marijuana is probably the single biggest crime that's being prosecuted down at the Santa Cruz County Courthouse.
Right.
And, you know, this is in spite of 215 having been passed, and many people would be able to show that they're qualified to use marijuana as medicinally.
Mm-hmm.
As, you know, even stress reduction.
Right.
I mean,
stomach
aches. As Theodore Carey said in the interview earlier, we were considering doing some activism around FIJA, the Fully Informed Jury Association, and basically encouraging people, instead of trying to get off of juries, to actually try to get on the juries. And there's this kind of a problem, you know. You go through if you've been selected for a jury, you go into the jury room, and there's you know, maybe 100 people that are being considered as jurors.
Right.
And you go through a process called the voir dire, where the judge and the attorneys for the prosecution, the defense, will ask questions of people. They'll say, well. The judge will say, how many people have ever been convicted of a crime?
Mm-hmm.
And you're supposed to, like, raise your hand.
Right.
And, of course, that means you're automatically eliminated if you raise your hand.
Right.
And then how many people here know someone, you know, a close friend or family member who was convicted of a crime? And then another set of hands go up. So they're ejected.
They flush everybody out.
It's a very privacy violating procedure.
Well, notice even like death penalties, you know, you can't you have to believe in a death penalty to be on a jury. If you don't believe in a death penalty, you're automatically ejected. And that happens case after case after case, you know. It's like you can't oppose a death penalty and be on a death penalty jury. I never understood that whole thing.
Well, I understand from having read some of the FIJA literature that no juror has ever been convicted for what their answers or non-answers were during the voir dire. So it may be kind of a false threat that you have to volunteer this information. I'm not really sure how many of those questions really are legitimate to ask, but a juror must understand that they can, that they're there to have not only to become educated on that particular law and that particular defendant and the merits of that case which is what the judge and the prosecuting attorney and defense attorney are attempting to do to the jury, to educate them so that they can make a proper decision. But the jury must realize that they're there because of their experience in society. They're supposed to see a bigger picture. They're supposed to have an understanding of generally about law. And remember that all law is based on the constitutional law, at least in the United States.
Right. And it's supposed to be a jury of your peers, so it's someone that you would possibly know. You know? And, of course, if you know the subject that's being accused or whatever, then you're obviously right away ejected from your jury seat.
Oh, yeah, there are all kinds of reasons. I'm sure that they reject jurors based on how they look. They prefer older jurors to younger jurors. If a person of color is generally not kept on, say, you know, if we're talking about, say, a drug case of some sort of possession of illegal substance. What I want to say about the drug laws in particular is that the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution of the United States prohibits excessive fines. And it's reasonable to say that any fine for possession of a small amount of marijuana, or even a large amount for that matter, that's an excessive fine.
Mm-hmm.
Really, most drug laws are excessive.
Especially when they come in and take your house and sell it before you're even, you know, taken to court. You have that right to do that now if you're growing marijuana or having some kind of drug in your house.
Yeah, we talked about the forfeiture laws
right.
A little earlier, and I have before me a very fine publication that came out in 1998, the latest edition.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Emperor Wears No Clothes by Jack Herer. He was here in Santa Cruz for the Hemp Festival. And I've got a little section here called Seizure, Feudal Law and Order. That sort of explains, although I, after this explanation, it's still really not clear why this is okay.
Right.
But I'm going to read some of this. So
okay.
Maybe you want to listen in. And
yeah, let me get off the phone and let you read it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to input on the drug war itself is that, of course, it's the longest running war we've had to date, you know, putting all the wars together. And we have more prisoners of war in prison that are wage slaves right now. And that's the whole purpose of this drug war is to get people into prisons and get them a workforce built up so they don't have to pay anybody to do their work for them. And that's my whole idea of...